trouble. I'm not kidding you. She's trouble. I know she's trouble. She's been trouble. She is trouble. She's going to stay trouble. She's Nancy Skinner, and she's going to tell you what she thinks. She's going to tell you what she feels and how she sees him. She's going to call him straight, whether you're right or left or center. Okay, she got a serious lean left, heavy lean left, but she's trouble. If you want somebody to be staying in the box and predictable and saying the stuff that everybody else is saying, you're on the wrong station. Isn't that the truth, Nancy?
That's right. Hey, John, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Don't turn that down now. There you go. This is trouble. The good part.
Otherwise, I'll have to sing in this. You don't want that.
Not that. Not quite that loud. All right. What an introduction. That is fabulous. That is. I am so honored. Who was that? Who was that voice?
Troublemaker.
Calling me a troublemaker. That's okay. He has the right. He's my former boss. Boss is in the studio today. He also happens to be a leadership expert in his own right. Out there speaking across the country. Little note, he's married to the governor of the state of Michigan. So this is Dan Mulhern. Welcome. Introduce Dan to the program, my dear friend Dan Mulhern. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Nancy. I got a massage about a week ago, long overdue because money's tight, you know, everywhere. Yeah. And this woman said, it was the first time I'd seen this massage therapist, she said, you have such an interesting title. And I could tell she had no idea what it was. I said, yeah, first gentleman is married to a governor. Jennifer Granholm was my wife. And it just cracked me up because I could only imagine what was going through her head. What the heck is a first gentleman? Which, of course, is what I've been asking myself.
Without the context, it could be a little, you could go there.
Only you would go there, trouble.
Yeah. Dan Mulhern was the first gentleman. Okay, so when he married the governor, were there a female governors? Or no one was called first gentleman? You invented the term. Tell that story before we jump into all this stuff.
Governor Shaheen's husband, Bill Shaheen, was good enough to take a call from me just to ask, what in the world did you do? I wasn't thinking about that. I was only thinking about my wife as governor. And I said, what did you call yourself? After we had talked about more serious things about how not to get in the way of your wife and let her run the show and don't be a jerk and don't get in trouble, I asked, what do you call yourself? And he said, well, I call myself the first hunk. He said, you'd have to see me to understand. He's like 6'4", 250. And you sitting across from me, no, that's not going to work with me. So I went with first gentleman. Actually, I found some fascinating stuff from the 1800s or early 1900s on what a gentleman was, and I was totally smitten by it. I thought, this is what we need in the world still, people to treat people with decency, to listen first. Even the schmaltzy stuff, opening doors for people, I was kind of taught that by my old country grandmother. So I thought, well, it'll give me something to live up to.
Well, that's nice. And, yeah. And in fact, when Gina Davis had her movie about being the first, or her TV series about being the first woman president, they called him the first gentleman, and they consulted with you.
Commander-in-chief, yeah. It was like a therapy session talking to six writers from L.A. Oh, and then this is terrible, and this is terrible. And don't forget to do this. Not really, but
well, it's funny because
it's an interesting role.
One of the weird aspects of my life is, as my listeners know, it's taken lots of turns. I had the privilege of being Dan's chief of staff for a while through some hard times in between congressional races, and so
I created hard times for you. Is that what you're saying?
No, it was just it was one of those tweeners, and we're in the state where we're going through. Everyone knows this through hard, difficult times because of the auto industry. So I want to cover a few things, Dan. Before we get into that, I see we have a surprise caller. Wow. Before we jump into the leadership portion of the program, it turns out that Dan's wife, Dan's bride, and our fabulous governor of the state of Michigan, who I have no idea how she's doing, all she's doing right now, is with us, Governor Granholm. So nice to have you.
Thank you, Nancy. Nice to be on. I'm glad you're having a show. Glad to be on and glad to hear Dan's voice because I haven't seen him in two days because I've been on the road.
Yeah, how you doing, Jen?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good, doing town halls in some of the smaller cities of Michigan.
Yeah, up north. I was in Cadillac this morning and then Clare, Michigan, beautiful up north, and it was a beautiful sunny day like it is down here.
Governor, I've been following your tweets.
Good.
Which is fantastic. I just started tweeting myself, so I didn't know how long you've been doing it. But and what I'm finding out is that you've had a lot of good news out there. So battery factories, and then I forget where you were today.
Wind turbine manufacturers.
Wind turbine give us that good
Home
news
studios.
A little bit, because we're going to get into all the other stuff. So we need to hear a little bit about... You really are helping to make Michigan become a magnet, because I'm having a fight with a lot of people. Right now I got this fight going on Daily Coast because I don't think they're paying enough attention to our situation right now.
Good. And good. I hope you're swinging.
I am.
Well, and we want people to know. I mean, obviously we live in this fabulous state, but we're going through a really hard time because of the auto industry, because we have 7 times more automotive employment than all the other states. So we're hit harder when GM and Chrysler are in negotiations over whether they're going to, you know, survive or not. It's obviously going to hit us harder, and then you layer the recession upon the top of it, and people aren't buying cars. So for us, the real focus has been on diversifying the economy. We want to support the auto industry. We want to diversify inside of the auto industry, and so making sure that we're the place where the electric vehicle is built and the batteries for that vehicle are built. Right now, all these batteries for electric cars are all built in Asia, so we want to bring that manufacturing here or create it here. So last week, one of the pieces of good news that you're talking about is that Ford, GM, Chrysler, and Dow Chemical all announced that they would build battery operations here in partnership with 4 different battery companies. In fact, they're going all of them after federal stimulus dollars to make those investments very robust, creating tens of thousands of jobs. You don't see it yet because obviously that's a strategy that's going to take a little bit of time to take root, but the bottom line is for the United States, it's important for us to become independent of outside sources of energy. This allows us to store energy and help create the vehicle that will help make us energy independent. So that was one. And the second is on wind turbines. You know, we adopted, as you know, Nancy, a renewable portfolio standard for our state last year to create demand for renewable energy. We keep saying that it's so obvious that Michigan, especially with our available factory space and our available workforce and our manufacturing know-how, that we could be the place that builds wind turbines for the nation, one of the places. And so we've been trying to recruit wind turbine manufacturers, and in the past months, I would say, there have been 2 wind turbine manufacturers, both of them announcing they're hiring, Global Wind Systems out of Livonia, and then Monday I was at one up north in Manistee. They are called Mariah Power, and they're making wind turbines that you can install in your own, you know, in your own backyard and in small, in commercial enterprises, so that you can generate your own energy for your own use, and if you generate more than you need, you can sell it back to the grid. And the great thing about Mariah Power, which is the place up in Manistee, is that they are being manufactured by a former auto supplier, Mastech, and the guy who's directing this, the general manager, has bought all of the parts for the wind turbines from auto suppliers in Michigan. So it gives our auto suppliers a chance to diversify.
Well, that's fantastic news, G. And you asked me, this is, I call her G, but it's Governor Jennifer Granholm, our fabulous governor. You asked me if I was swinging. I'll tell you what, I started swinging. I see you are in on this battle too. I started swinging big time a couple of weeks ago. I read a Wall Street Journal article saying that, in fact, Chase Bank, which is one of the, there are 4 major banks that were bailout recipients to the tune of billions of dollars, and that Chase, as a secured creditor among them, is essentially saying they would prefer Chrysler to go into liquidation and get the, they think they could do better once they take the plant and equipment and the assets, and so they'd rather do that. And they are playing hardball. So I got on the air, Governor, and this is a national show. We're in Los Angeles and Buffalo and Portland and all over. And everyone, I drive a Chrysler, and I've had 2 Chase accounts for 20 years. Close my Chase accounts down.
Wow, good
and
for you.
I got people calling in all over the country who are closing their Chase accounts down because they believe that it is so wrong. And I saw today or yesterday in the Free Press where you were quoted as saying, who knew that bailing out the banks would essentially allow them to try to kill the auto industry.
Right. Think about this. I mean, here the taxpayers have given these banks billions and billions of dollars in bailouts, And now what all we're asking is that they take a haircut on some of the debt that's owed to them in order to enable Chrysler to survive, because this deadline is now 7 days away, and one of the big issues that is still the big hurdles that needs to be jumped over is that these guys who hold this debt, including, and it's not just Chase, it's Morgan Stanley, it's Citibank, it's Goldman Sachs, and it's a ton of these hedge funds, those are the real sharks, who are interested only in, you know, like vultures circling the carcass, which would be after bankruptcy, because then they can obtain the assets. Well, you know, my whole pitch to them, and I sent them letters, and I have been on the phone to these guys saying, are you really serious? Do you like the optics of this? That the banks, who appear to have gotten away scot-free anyway, take all this taxpayer dollars, declare a profit in the first quarter. All these banks that I talked about all declared a profit in the first quarter and won't even take a haircut. And Nancy, just for your listeners, when I talk about a haircut, if they were to sell this debt that they hold right now on the free market, right now it's worth about 17 cents on the dollar. And so what the Obama administration asked them to do is just take a market-based haircut. So if you can't sell it for any more than that, don't ask us to take any more of it, and just give us that market-based debt haircut. And they won't even do that. They wanted more than twice what you could get on the market, plus a stake in equity. The bottom line is it's just greed. They want to protect their own investors. I understand that.
But don't we have leverage? Certainly, it seems like the Treasury, anyone who took money, Rick Wagner is no longer the CEO. Where is the leverage to force them? This is taxpayer dollars being used to destroy an industry that will have a cascading. I wrote a post today. It's my second thing I was swinging up. We're 7 days away from this, and we're talking about. We're talking about stuff, and not that the torture and prosecutions aren't important legal issues,
right.
But we are 7 days away from this.
Across America, it's retirees across America. The ripple effect would be horrific, and yes, they're trying to use as much leverage as they possibly can, but I think some of your public leverage is very helpful, too. So keep at it, girl.
Okay. Well, hey, we're happy to have your husband tossing around some topics with me.
Great.
And always good to hear from you, Governor. Keep it up.
Likewise.
Second toughest job in the world next to Barack Obama, being the governor of Michigan. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks, babe. See you later.
All right. Take care, babe.
All right. Bye.
That's the governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, who's, honestly, that is the toughest job.
I didn't say it on the air, Nancy, but we closed our Chase account about 8 months ago.
Did you?
Yeah, just because of the way modern mega banks work. They're trying to kill us to help taxpayers.
Good for
to
you.
Help shareholders. Not taxpayers. Certainly not doing that.
Yeah, and you know what else today is going on? Obama is meeting with those banks because of their credit card policies, which also have been usurious in ways, taking taxpayer money and then they're raising rates. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that's Capital
today.
23% on my card right now.
Great. So, anyways, the banks, man, we're mad. All right, so I've caused some problems with Rachel Maddow, and she took a hit at the Lions logo, and it's all over Daily Coast. And Dan's going to talk to us about leadership issues and looking at Obama's task, because that's what he is. He's a guru, and I needed him to come calm me down. So we brought in my old boss to come calm us all down and figure out how leadership factors into all of this. 1-888-64-NANCY, that's 1-646-2629. We rock on the Nancy Skinner Show. Okay, let's keep it moving along here on the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. That's 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. If you don't have those letters on your phone. I am so pleased to be joined by my former boss and dear friend Dan Mulhern, who is the first gentleman of Michigan. But he went to Yale and he's seminary school and met the governor at law school in Harvard. And he's been a leadership consultant in his own right for so long. JanMulhern.com is his website. You can also follow him. We're just having a conversation about Twittering and how valuable that is. And what is your Twit title? tweet title.
You know what? I put up Everyday Leader, which is the name of my book, Everyday Leadership. I'm doing my radio show on Saturday called Everyday Leadership, Making Work Work on Social Networking. And so I had four or five really big, great, great guests, and they said, use your own name. You want people to find you, they're going to find you with your name. So I'm all about everyday leadership, that anybody can lead. Your next caller is going to lead in her own way by moving the world, just a little nudge. But my name is twitter.com/Dan Mulhern, M-U-L-H-E-R-N.
Good. And we're going to talk about some of these important issues that are going on in the nation and here with the autos as well. But let's get Kathy in the conversation from Los Angeles.
Hey, Hi, Nancy. Oh, my God. Your number is so great. Oh, Nancy. I'm calling because I want you to just keep on pushing on this Chrysler thing, because I don't know what is going on. I don't know where this torture thing came from. But all of a sudden, everybody acts like nothing else is important. I mean, if you don't need a job and you don't need food or anything like that, I guess the torture is important. If you're rich, I guess that is important. But if you're one of us, who are out here working every day, and you don't want to see your brothers and sisters in Michigan losing more than they've already lost, maybe we should all be talking about this, you know, the auto industry.
Yeah.
God bless you, Kathy. God bless you.
You know, Kathy, I caused a stir about this. Go to dailycoast.com and go to my page. I'm causing a stir because it's not that I said there's no place for prosecution and we shouldn't abide by the laws, but sometimes timing is everything. And when the nation is you know, hell in a handbasket, as we know, and we have a 7-day deadline for all this stuff, is this really the time? Honestly, this is, and I've taken heat for it, but you know what? That's what causing trouble is all about, I guess. You got to be willing to stand the heat. So it's important. It's important for people in their lives right now, so I'm not giving up. And we're going to talk about that on the other side. I love Rachel Maddow, but I had to shout her out last night. And we'll be talking about that and fighting the good fight as we continue with Dan Mulhern on The Nancy Skinner Show. Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64 Nancy. Okay. Dan Mulhern, my dear friend and former boss, is with me. He is a leadership expert and has been for years a consultant, an author, a speaker. Has a website, danmulhern.com. And you know, he's always we're just talking about it. It's tough because he is the husband of the governor of Michigan. And so there's always that interesting interplay between them. But we're also talking about, you know, being able to, as you just heard the governor said, I hope you're swinging a punch. Well, let's start with this, Dan. I swung a punch last night. Because we're in Michigan and everybody knows that, and some people think I have just a chip on my shoulder because we saw this poll out. I'm reading let's just set this up, folks. I'm reading through all the bad news kind of yesterday that GM is furloughing their plants for 9 weeks. Already heard on the way in that could cause it. Already the suppliers are worried that that's enough withdrawn liquidity for them to tip them over. I mean, we are 7 days out of this. So we're nervous as all get out here, right? And going through all these stories, the anxiety high at Chrysler. Look at this poll. Most prefer GM Chrysler to go bankrupt. 76% of Americans say they prefer the automakers to go through bankruptcy. And so then, I'm feeling it in my gut, that just the fear and anxiety. And I love Rachel Maddow, and I watch her every night. But last night, in the middle of this, and we've been talking about torture as an issue, and Dan's going to weigh in on that and the idea of focus. But last night, after this discussion of torture, which was lengthy, as I predicted it would consume a lot of media oxygen, she changed subjects, and here's where she went.
And the Detroit Lions had a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad football season. The worst one ever. This past year, the Detroit Lions were 0-16. Now, for you non-sports fans, the O is a zero, and that's the number of games the team won all season. 16 is the number of games they lost. It's a very special kind of perfection. So what's the losingest team in sports to do? Well, if the house is falling down, why not slap a fresh coat of paint on it? Yes, the Detroit Lions, the sports metaphor for failure, they are sprucing up their mascot. They're making their lion mascot scarier. The previous logo was admittedly a little tame. I mean, how tough can you seem if your lion mascot doesn't even have teeth? They've therefore scarified their lion. You see the sharper edges and the fangs, the wind-whipped mane. Arr, wind-blown, angular, toothy. If only I gambled, I'd put it all on that logo. Lions fans, you can pick up your new scarier lion swag this Saturday at Ford Field in Detroit when the Lions host their annual draft party. Because they didn't win a single game last year, their consolation prize is that they have the first pick in the draft. Can you imagine the mixed emotions for the college superstar they eventually select? Not so crazy about going to the worst team ever, but wow, nice lion.
Now, Dan, talk me down here, okay? We're 8 days out from an Armageddon in the auto industry. There's no rallying cry. This is on my blog at nancyskinnertlive.com. No rallying cry to maintain the manufacturing base in our country. No concern for the legacy of the auto workers who lost their lives to form unions to give us a middle class. We were the arsenal of democracy during World War II. Those same retirees are about to lose a lion's share of their pension health care benefits. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger was here last week saying Detroit was not far behind and the government should be helping them get to this point. And this is what we get ripped on? Our football team sucks?
All right, well, let me say this, Nancy, and then ask a question of your listeners. I just don't think it's an issue. I mean, she's playing around and she's having fun with the Lions. And frankly, you and I would both suffer through 10 more 0-16 seasons to keep Chrysler and GM alive. So here's what I want to ask our national audience, because with my wife as the governor of Michigan and being the first gentleman here, we were shocked, as I'm sure you were, at how the country responded when our big three automakers went to D.C. Okay, we were as mad as anybody that they took private jets and that they were so seemingly in a bubble and the bad PR around that. But what really shocked us was people talked about this big three like you and I knew it in 1970, which was it was way fat and laborers didn't work hard and the union got anything they wanted from the company and the quality was terrible and they didn't care about emissions and on and on and on. But the companies that we've known have changed dramatically. Now, they're not making it. They're still not there. Mm-hmm. But here's what I want to ask about the rest of the country that doesn't seem to know that our autos have changed, that we have got the most fuel-efficient fleets. Ford will in every single class, I think, this next year. Every single class, they'll have the leading car. It's not the Camry. It's going to be the
Fusion.
The Fusion, mm-hmm. Right. And up and down the line. At any rate, here's what I want to ask. What don't we understand here in Michigan? What don't we understand when we think we know we have the most technological product on the market? It's got more technology in it than anything coming out of Silicon Valley. We know that. We know that making things matters. Diversification matters. Nobody wants a personal portfolio that only has finance or healthcare or autos. Same for a country. You've got to have diversification. We know that we shifted to building fighter planes and all kinds of things in World War II. Do we think Chase Bank is going to build a tank? So what are we not getting here in Michigan? You know, somebody help me.
Yeah,
give them a telephone number.
One triple eight. No, and yeah, I'm going to add fuel to this fire too. 1-888-64. Nancy, so that's 1-888-646-2629. So this was posted on Daily Coast today. I took my post from my website and put it on to Daily Coast, and I cannot believe the vitriol that came back about Michigan and why we deserve this. And I mean, there were some defenders, and I'm going to check back in on this, but there's a huge roaring discussion about this that, you know, you deserve it and admit. And what on earth, honestly? Because look at the banks and what they've done. Look at today, the credit card companies, Dan. President's meeting with them. Look at the usurious practices that they've been engaged in, jacking up rates, you're a day late and all this stuff. And it just seems like there's a special place in hell for Michigan or Detroit that is not for these banks who are at this point crushing us.
Is it some kind of weird self-loathing, Nancy, that autos are such a mainstream kind of thing, you know, working class and blue collar, and that we hate ourselves? I mean, it's remarkable to me that in a question between an organization that generates jobs for immigrants as it did for migrants who came up from the South, who are now retirees having worked 30 or 40 years. We're like, write them off. No big deal. I'm flabbergasted. Somebody help me.
We are, and I think a lot of people took shots at me because I I said I love Rachel, but come on. That was like twist. What I said was, it's like kicking a player down on a field. That's what it felt like to hear that. Just that one more jab. Instead of the rallying cry that the people that make things, let's help them out. It was like, oh, yeah, and their team sucks.
And we're not wearing an athletic protector, not after our Lions.
So
don't kick us while we're down.
So if you want to weigh in on why is it that people have this feeling, we'll listen to you at that at 1-888-64-NANCY. But in the meantime, while we're doing that, I'm logging on to Daily Coast. Yeah, there's more. There's more out there. Dan, let's talk a little bit about he listened to my show yesterday, and we were talking about it because I guess I've caused another ruckus in that I questioned the focus. And Dan talks about this a lot as a leadership consultant, that you have priorities and there's a lot of this idea of you have so much political capital and focus. Now, I have questioned whether with the introduction of this torture, these memos being released, I just posed out there. I said, listen, is the timing of it such that it may jeopardize these really important issues like cap and trade and health care that essentially, Obama ran on, you know? I mean, he didn't run on having to deal with the global meltdown.
Right.
He got that. But he also ran on these things. And as much as I understand the anger and justification for the folks who are upset about the potential law breaking on torture, what do you think about focus? Do you think I'm off base to question it? Because I've gotten attacked for even questioning it.
No, of course you're not off base to question it. I mean, of course you should question it. You're trouble, and that's what you're supposed to do, and we've got to get people thinking. But here's how I would agree with you. The problem with torture is that it's really visceral. It's not unlike gays in the military, issues like that where people can understand them. Nobody understands cap and trade. So getting people to focus on that is hard. Healthcare, we know, is incredibly complicated. People can't focus on that. But on both sides of this issue, people can focus on it. They can focus on our role in the world, and they can focus on our troops and not wanting them to be waterboarded. And on the other hand, they can say, you know, it kept us safe. It was a terrible moment in history. So I think people can understand it. And that's the danger of this that I think you're right about, is that people can get off track and stay focused on it because they can comprehend it and they feel deeply and strongly about an issue like torture. But he's got to be able to get back to the core economic issues. He's got to get back to it's the economy stupid, as we said about Bush once upon a time.
But, you know, there's only so much media oxygen out there, and if people think I'm wrong, then I listened all morning today on all the promos for the upcoming shows. Tonight, will Eric Holder do the hearings? It was on promo for every single show.
Right.
And so, obviously, we're 7 days out from the auto collapse, and these are the promos on the show. I think that makes my point, does it not, in a way that the media, because it is simpler for the media, too. You know, I mean, they're the same.
Yeah,
the whole
right. They don't understand cap and trade.
Recovery program.
Right.
You know, that's just, and there's no visuals. They already have designed music and logos and hearings.
And torture works. I mean, you know, it scares every one of us. It scares kids. I mean, so it's very visceral, and people understand that. I agree. Yeah. On the other hand, the news cycles are so fast. I mean, people tweet and Twitter, and it's here and gone. So the question is, how does he get back on track, and how does he get to the core issue? And this will be the challenge, I think, for a man who wants to do a lot of things. I look back at my wife's governorship. You know, she tried to do a whole lot of things, and she has done a whole lot of things. And I think he's right to get a whole lot of things done, but he's got to keep the country, the core of the country, focused on the central things. And that's the challenge, because people careen off so easily onto side issues.
And a lot of people keep saying that he can do both, and I don't. Those are two big bolts. Let's get Lisa in here. She wants to weigh in on to your question, Dan, about the automakers and why everyone hates us, I suppose, is the question. Lisa's in California. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Say hi to Dan Mulhern.
Hi.
Hey, Lisa, love to hear the Californian view.
Well, first of all, I don't believe that anybody hates the workers. I think I feel very sorry for the workers that they work for a company that's going under. But I think that the common belief, especially in California, for most of the people that I talk to, is that the automakers were in bed with the oil companies and really prevented a lot of cars from being made that would be more fuel efficient, and it wasn't until Honda and Toyota started coming out with more fuel efficient cars and selling more that now they're jumping on the bandwagon, but it's just too little, too late. And a lot of people feel like, you know what, if you're going to go against the environment and go against what's best for our world, then you should go under, and maybe it'll teach a lesson to other companies that you need to listen to what the people who are buying the cars want, and you can't just force cars on us that aren't as good and you get my point. So and to be honest, I didn't even know when you said that you're coming out with better products I didn't even know, because I've been so turned off that when I go to look for a car, I just go straight to Honda or Toyota.
Yeah, Lisa, I think we've been a disaster in public relations because, you know, the Ford Escape was one of the first green vehicles out there. And as I was saying before, Ford is leading the class, and lots of them, the Malibu's getting something like 40 miles per gallon, was the top car in motor car trends. Whether it's quality or whether it's fuel efficiency, we've done really well. And one thing that's clear to me, is we've been a disaster, Nancy Skinner, at letting people know the changes in American car quality. Thanks for answering the call, Lisa. Really appreciate that.
So there you go, Lise. That's what we're trying to say. And listen, I'm not exactly a shill for the industry, but it's true. It's this close. And here's what happens. You let it go under. You said we should teach them a lesson. What about the banks who've been doing this forever? Lots of companies have done this. We're this close. They have this shift. It takes time to get that product out. If they collapse, guess who's going to get it? The Chinese. The Chinese who own our debt, who are strangling us right now. So that's where the technology is going to go. And that's your choices. Okay, so Chinese and Korean cars are going to take over. Is that what you want, Lisa? Is that really American? We want you to hear us out and look at what we got and give us a chance, because this is about making things, manufacturing things in this country.
It's not just cars. I mean, cars are going to drive the alternative energy technology, the battery technology, and a lot of the alternative fuels that will affect much more than cars. Yeah.
And look at the spin-off technology that comes out of this region, beyond cars.
Yep,
so
yep.
That is, you're right, Dan. We need to have a better PR team here. We're taking applications for better PR people. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number of the program. We don't have much time left with my fearless leader in Michigan, Dan Mulhern, the first gentleman who is to me. He's a leader, a thought leader on leadership, and we're facing some tough times here in Michigan.
Ooh, a thought leader.
A thought leader. Like 1-888-64-NANCY. We have a couple questions on the table concerning what the heck is it? What's wrong with you people? We are, this state, this industry is on the rebound. We are weeks away from it. And where are you? Why aren't we all one union in all of this? Let's go to Anaheim and get Lee in the program. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Nancy. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Hey, I just, in what I've been seeing lately is the state senators, congressmen, U.S. congressmen, U.S. senators, they're all getting $800-$900 a month car allowance. They're not driving those nice Chevy Malibus that are being produced. They're not driving some of these new smaller Fords. They're out there with some pretty big vehicles. And what's the example? Lead by example.
Members of Congress.
Well, sure.
Dan,
I don't know. I haven't been in the garage lately, Lee. I don't know. Our Michigan guys are all car guys, so they drive American cars, and generally they're not driving big SUVs. They're driving smaller vehicles. I don't know. Our Secretary of Energy, I sat next to him at a dinner a couple weeks ago, and we talked for an hour and a half. And of course, he's a long time in California and drove a Lexus. And he was one of those people who really, I think, knew the Detroit auto companies of the 1970s, maybe the 1980s. He was as surprised as some of our listeners have been that we have such fuel-efficient vehicles. So it's hard to figure, but I think there's a lot of people who are out of touch, and maybe that's our fault in Michigan, but what a huge cost for the country to lose a sector that's so unbelievably important in so many respects.
All right, let's move along. We don't have much time here, so Jackie's in California. Hi, Jackie. Yeah,
hi.
That's
your
Jackie.
Great. I think there's three reasons that you see the views that people are holding the country, and they're all wrong, but that's nonetheless. The first is the anti-union sentiment that has been portrayed against the UAW has been for 35 years. So people have just assumed that somehow they're overpaid and they don't work and they get paid for not working and blah, blah, blah. The second is every time you look at a cafe, which is, you know, the fuel efficiency standards hearing, it is always a big three automakers saying, no, we can't possibly raise the cafe standards for American cars. That's a big part of why Californians have some negative feelings about Detroit. And then finally, of course, there was a period of time, and you've alluded to it several times already on the show, when people had bad experiences with cars. And since for most of us, it's the biggest expense we ever make, because a lot of us never get to own a home,
okay,
a bad experience does leave a bad taste for a long time.
Jack, well, let's let Dan respond, because we don't have much time.
Yeah, Jackie, I think that's a really great view. And I think, again, it shows critically how people get insulated or isolated. Politicians do it, and I think our auto companies did, and you know, I guess what I'm hearing over and over is what a terrible job we've done at promoting ourselves, and how we need to get Americans aware of the incredible quality that's there, and the concessions that have been
made.
And
mea culpa, Dan, and we have said mea culpa over and over again, and there's a new generation, a younger generation that gets this. That was then, as Dan said. There are new. We care about the planet now. I mean, it's a whole new industry, and that's why we got to take a whole new look at it.
Yeah, but unfortunately, these parents and grandparents, Nancy, are raising children who've come to understand that.
All right, Dan Mulhern, always a pleasure to have you. Come back, will you?
My pleasure, Nancy. I will be.
On the Nancy Skinner Show. Okay, another strange day in my life. What else is new? I am Nancy Skinner. This is Nancy Skinner Show on a Thursday, as far as I can tell. Is that correct, Cree? Is that information correct? All right. Just had to say goodbye to my friend Dan Mulhern. He's a really, really good guy. And so we wanted to ask the rest of the country, why do you hate us so much? No, listen, Really, honestly, I was hurt last night. If you go to the blog, and my blog, nancyskinnerlive.com, or you go to Daily Coast, a lot of people are responding to that whole thing. All I said was, when you heard Rachel Maddow, she was going after the logo. And I just said, God, if you only knew what it was like here 7 days. Can you imagine being in a state where you know that in 7 days, I mean, that is anything, there's nothing you can talk about. But in 7 days, Chrysler is going to go into bankruptcy if there's no deal. And that, the administration had said, would be liquidation. 7 days. Now, already on the way here, the local reporters are already saying that what that means is the suppliers, GM's going to shut down their plants for 9 weeks. They announced that today. The news already went out to employees. So you have people, the suppliers are already saying we're going to lose money. We're going to have to shut down because they are on a fine line. And so you shut down the plants for 9 weeks because there's all this inventory because no one's buying cars, and it's the banks that are doing this. It's begun. And I said in my post, it's like knowing a hurricane category five is headed your way. It's a slow motion Katrina. Okay, that's the mental aspect of this. Is like we've been seeing this coming, and when we get the calls from some of the callers we just had, saying you blaming Detroit, realize you are blaming the executives at the top of these companies. But this is a whole state, it's a whole region, and there are good people who never had any control of that. And there are people like myself who live here who actually fought against that and rallied against that. It's not as if everyone in Detroit, all these people in Michigan, agreed that they should fight CAFE standards. Just like every single company that has made greedy and bad decisions. So why is it generalized against this region? Now you have people who are retirees, who are about to lose, if this all happens, if nothing happens in 7 days, I can't say this more clearly. Did you just hear the governor of our state on the show? Chrysler's going to go bankrupt, and I'm going to tell you that's going to cause suppliers to go under, that's going to take out other auto companies, and that's going to start rippling across this country. And why I've been a little upset about the obsession with torture, it's not that I don't think it should be prosecuted, and if you go to my blog, and I've been responding to some of the blogs out there, I never said that you should not prosecute. But I do think that there is a religious and philosophical justification for preventing a catastrophe before it happens, that's at your doorstep. We will still have time to go back and do this. If we had a statute of limitations that was 90 days, that would be different. That's not the case. We have real human suffering. We have people losing their homes, homeless, living in cardboard. We have tent cities. Detroit has created their own currency, okay? And we're spending all our time. I was right yesterday when I said the media fixation, all the shows. Tonight, will Eric Holder pursue a special prosecutor coming up on every show? And 7 days, and one in 10 jobs is going to go under. So, you know, darn it, I'm right, and I'm going to stick with that. And there's a lot of people out there who, today, I've just seeing the local stories and the heartbreak that's going on. These people didn't make those decisions. These people weren't the ones saying, we're going to fight the CAFE standards. Those were the lawyers and lobbyists, mostly based in Washington, okay? And that is an era gone by that we are having to suffer. So speaking of suffering, we're going to talk now to Dr. Harold Urschel. He is a psychiatrist and an addiction specialist. And the reason he's on is because I've seen reports all over, not only in Detroit locally, but all over the country, that this current meltdown, if you will, is causing a lot of people to resort to drugs, and food, whatever their comfort zone is. Actually, there were some stories about members of Congress are battling the bulge, and everybody is eating more and drinking more and smoking or turning to drugs. That's real human suffering, folks, that's happening right now. So, Dr. Urschel, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Nancy. Thanks for having me today.
First, let's try to quantify some of this, if you will. Are they doing studies about an increase due to the global meltdown?
Well, the global meltdown has been relatively recent in the last 6 or 9 months. Usually studies of the nature that you're looking at tend to take a year, year and a half to actually do. So they don't have any large-scale studies, but what they do have is small-scale samples here, samples there, and I run a large addiction treatment program, drug and alcohol addiction treatment program in Dallas, and we've seen our numbers go up by 30 or 40%, just as far as since the economic crisis hit, if you'd say, starting late last summer and definitely into the fall, people are turning to the use of substances to help them cope, as a way to cope with the stress of all the economic and financial stress, and then the life stress and everything associated with it.
Okay, so you know, is it, it obviously there is a cause and effect here. People lose their job, and there's no, I don't know, that seems to me there probably are across the world when you have, when you lose a child, there's lots of things, war, strife going on. But the financial panic that ensues, and they're just turning to whatever makes the pain go away?
Yes, it's usually not a logical decision, especially what's happening is people that may have just been heavily using substances, but maybe not addicted yet. I mean, addiction is actually a chronic brain disease, and so you wouldn't develop that chronic brain disease overnight if all of a sudden you had some economic stress. But the people that maybe were leaning towards heavier drug use or heavier alcohol use, and then this economic stress hits, it kind of puts them over sort of the edge of the crevasse, so to speak, and they fall in, and their brain changes, and they get this chronic medical disease of alcohol addiction. Other people don't get it because they haven't really been using it, and many times it takes a little while of using the substances to actually get addicted to them.
So what changes actually happen in the brain? This is fast. Neuroscience is something I'm fascinated by. What actually happens? Can you explain it in layman's terms?
I'll do my best. I've just written a book called Healing the Addicted Brain. And it just came out earlier this week, and it really talks a lot about this. If my discussion today is not enough for you or your listeners, but the real changes in the brain occur at multiple levels. And what happens is the reward system, which is, you may have heard of dopamine, which is like that's the neurotransmitter, the
sure.
neurochemical in your brain that makes you feel good.
Right. So when I work out, is that what is rushing to my brain after
well,
a good
that,
workout?
That technically is your endorphins and your enkephalins, but they stimulate the dopamine. Okay. If you drink alcohol and start to get drunk, that means and you kind of feel that euphoria associated with the drunkenness. That is the dopamine sort of being activated in your brain. And the problem
but isn't
is,
alcohol more of a calming agent?
Well, absolutely, but there's a euphoria or a real pleasant sensation in many cases. And so we could come back to the calming part of alcohol because that's actually a different neurotransmitter system. We have maybe 12 to 35. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of major groups of chemicals that scientists have found in our brain that cause it. I mean, it's a very complex organ, I'm sure, as you know. The addiction tends to focus on the substances that stimulate this dopamine to make you feel good. Because if
okay.
you feel really good, then you'll use the substance over and over.
Right. Okay.
And so what happens is, if once those substances you put in your brain, your body, to get your brain to have this dopamine release, those substances also injure the brain. The cells are hurt, damaged that surround these dopamine areas, and consequently, when the alcohol or the drugs are gone, these areas kind of short circuit. Say, you know, you were talking about the hurricane a few minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, hurricane analogy. Well, you know, if you have a strong wind, if you snap a electrical line in a hurricane, you know how it's kind of, you know, waving around with electricity, the sparks flying out? That's what's happening in the center of your brain. You have these physiological electricity.
You're short wiring your brain?
Yeah, you're right. You're short circuiting
mm-hmm.
the area of your brain, and that's causing the cravings. And the problem is, the problem with drug and alcohol addiction is most people don't treat it correctly because they're not treating the part that's short-circuiting. They're trying to just talk to people, like using talking therapy. You go to a drug and alcohol treatment program. You go to AA or 12 steps. Both of those are very, very good. Don't get me wrong. Don't hear that I'm not supporting those. Problem is those only treat part of the brain problem. They don't treat the short-circuiting. We have some really neat, cool medications that really affect and very, very, very quickly.
Ah, some more drugs.
no more medications, actually, that really make a difference. For instance, let me just give you an
yeah.
example, because I know you...
You know what, doctor, let's save that, because I know a lot of people there. I want to hear this, and we're up against our music, so they want to know what it is. In fact, I saw an article on CNN I want to ask you about addiction treatment that people are having amazing success with. So that's probably what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it's when you combine the medications with the talking therapy, that's when you get 95% success rate.
And the symptoms go away. That's what
yeah,
I was amazed by this little, I saw it on the ticker. So we will ask Dr. Harold Urschel to save that little gem. If you're out there stressed out, drinking, smoking, eating, because eating is what is also an addiction right now. Comfort food. Everyone wants a little comfort food. when the stress is upon them. So maybe there's something that can get you through it. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-646-2629. Trying to bring a little, sort of some answers in the middle of this madness as we continue on the Nancy Skinner Show. Fine, because you're not in Michigan, then you don't need to worry about it. But everyone here is on their edge of the edge of insanity, I'll tell you that, with 7 days to go before they hear whether the major industry of the state could go under. I'll tell you, anxiety is so high. Those are headlines. There's personal stories every single day about people who are losing their homes and losing their jobs and turning to drugs and turning to alcohol. And all these things are happening as a result of this cascade. So we brought Dr. Harold Urschel on the program. He's a psychiatrist and an addiction specialist. And we were just talking about the fact that there are some new actual medical treatments that go beyond just happy talk, behavioral counseling, I should say. But let's get to that, doctor, and then I have to ask you another question. We've been talking about on the political side of this, since you're a brain specialist. Yep. I'm going to tease my audience with that, and they know what I'm talking about, because Janine Garofalo made some inflammatory remarks about the brains of Republicans. So since I have a professional psychiatrist on, I'm going to avail myself. What are these treatments you're talking about?
Well, okay, before I jump to that, let me delay that for 1 second. I noticed during the break that you had a advertisement or a PSA about heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now heart disease is a chronic medical illness. Addiction, drug and alcohol addiction, is the exact same. And why I say that is very important. Alcoholism is the third leading cause of death in the United States, behind heart disease and cancer. The problem is most people treat heart disease correctly. All the information they said on that commercial was very true. The problem is with alcoholism, drug addiction, most people, including physicians, treat alcoholism and drug addiction incorrectly.
Okay.
And that's why it's so important, this information, these medications we're about to talk about, because like over 105,000 people died as a direct consequence of alcohol use last year. 105,000.
Okay.
That dwarfs any, I feel terrible anytime any soldier dies overseas. You know, in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Right, we gotcha. Bad, this is the third leading cause. We don't have a whole lot of time, so I don't want to...
And now we have medication. One of the medications is called Vivitrol, V-I-V-T-R-O-L. This is a shot for alcoholism. You get it once a month, and during that month, it prevents you from getting drunk or high. Reduces your cravings for alcohol by 90%, and severely limits the severity of your relapse.
So it's not like that one drug where you throw up when you drink it?
No, that's anabuse. That's actually an effective medicine. It's been around for a long time, but that's not nearly as good as this new medicine. This is a shot that once you get this shot once a month, you can't stop it. It's in your body. For that month, you can't get drunk. You still drink. You won't get sick, but it's like drinking water or Gatorade. You won't feel anything.
Okay.
It blocks that euphoria, the dopamine release that we were just talking about prior to the break. Huge.
So there's no payoff, so that helps you gradually move away.
That's right. That's why people drink, because they want that dopamine release. Okay, if you're an alcoholic, you want that. Your brain reacts differently than other people. You have this chronic disease. Same thing for heroin or prescription narcotic addiction. We have a medicine called Suboxone, S-U-B-O-X-O-N-E. Basically, within 2 or 3 days, you can all but cure a heroin addict with this medication. You take away the cravings, their brain normalizes, they try and use heroin, it doesn't work.
Is revolutionary stuff, doctor.
It really is, and the goal of talking to you on this forum is you have to...
We only have 30 seconds here. Is there a website that people could go to learn more?
Yes, it would be www.enterhealth, with HealthTherehealth.com.
EnterHealth.com.
Yes, okay. It has information all about the Healing the Addicted Brain, which is the new book that's targeted lay public, explains all this, plus all the information for people that don't get the book. They can go directly to the website. And
great.
Get
we are plumb out of time. Dr. Harold Urschel, thank you so much. Nancy Skinner. Torture, we got torture. It is a Nancy Skinner Show, and I'm Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. We have been talking, obviously, with the release of the Levin report about torture for 4 days now, 3 days, I think. Every day, a little dribble more information. Today, all morning, as I said, they're promoing it. This is great ratings. Will Eric Holder do something? So we have some sound coming up from you. Eric Holder was supposed to be testifying on spending at the Justice Department. Of course, it was a lot of questioning concerning what his plans were. Everybody now, this is the hot potato everybody's trying to deal with. So joining us to talk about what has transpired, what potentially will transpire, is someone who knows a whole lot about it. Michael Ratner is one of the top 100 attorneys in the United States, and a leading attorney on this issue. He is with the Center for Constitutional Rights, and they have been representing the prisoners at Gitmo for years now. His book is The Trial of Donald Rumsfeld. It is a trial by print of administration officials for war crimes. He's written the script. And his sister Ellen's a good friend of mine. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Nancy. It's nice to talk to you.
So obviously you've been working with the prisoners down in Gitmo and following this whole thing for years. What is new to you in the last week or so? You know, the sort of any develop. What strikes you as a professional following this?
You know, there's some very striking developments. You know, we at the center have been pushing, and as my book does, pushing for prosecutions of what I call the Bush torture team. You know, Rumsfeld et al., Cheney, Tenet, the whole bunch. And when Obama took office, I didn't really expect much very quickly. And there's been some rapid changes, and of course over the last week, in which there seems to be some closings and some openings. And the openings have been that yesterday, Obama said that he was going to refer the matter of the prosecution of the lawyers and others to Eric Holder for them to make a determination, or Holder's office to make a determination. And that's the first time you've actually heard them even think that they might actually open a criminal investigation. So that's an opening. Closing,
the administration,
of course.
Is this, you heard Leahy talk about his almost Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I had John Conyers on my show saying he thinks that you got to go all the way to prosecution. So
I'm with Conyers here all the way. Leahy, I think, and all that stuff for Truth Commissions, that's an excuse for not doing it. It's a dead end. We already have a huge amount of information out there. I think people, if they want to get the administration off the hook or themselves off the hook, they'll set up some kind of truth commission, they'll give immunity to a bunch of people, and 2 years from now you and I will be talking about how there's no prosecutions.
Mm-hmm. So the Levin report.
Well, that's the Levin report reads like a detailed script for my book. I mean, the Levin report is about Donald Rumsfeld. That's what it's really about. It's about techniques, procedures, waterboarding, the use, not waterboarding particularly, but more the use of dogs, the use of stripping, hooding, all kinds of stuff that they were going to use on Guantanamo detainees. It was at the feet of Donald Rumsfeld and a bunch of lawyers, Haynes and others, and what the Levin report says, and it gets very precisely, That's Rumsfeld, that's Haynes, who is Rumsfeld's attorney. It's the DOD people. It's the CIA people who were in on it. And then even worse, it's the Principals Committee, those meetings were at the White House, Condoleezza Rice and others sitting around.
Yeah, that was the breaking news today, that Condoleezza Rice signed off on those reports.
It's a big deal. I mean, you know, here Rumsfeld, of course, they've been throwing to the dogs for a while. You know, but Condoleezza was sort of like the poster child for everybody who's okay here, and she isn't. And she was right in there, in fact, leading the group. So what you have is in the
left. What about Colin Powell? Did you ever investigate how what he knew?
You know, it's so interesting, Paul. I'm glad you asked that. You know, his sidekick or his aide is named Wilkerson. And Wilkerson, at least, used to say that Powell really didn't know that much and was shocked by it. And Wilkerson was told, you know, to get to the bottom of it, how could they be doing this torture? And in fact, what comes out in the Levin report is that Powell was at a number of those meetings and knew about it and signed off on it.
Oh, that's disappointing. Gosh, you just want to believe that he wasn't capable of that.
Isn't it amazing how disappointing things can be in our lives as you get older?
Oh, no, trust me. Hey, if you knew my story. Hey, what about George Tenet? You said CIA. Obviously, it must have gone up to the top.
Oh, you know, if there's somebody that they should get here, it's George Tenet. I mean, George Tenet, let's remember, was head of the CIA. He was head of the CIA when they ran the secret sites all over the world where they actually waterboarded and tortured people in the most severe way. And he's the one, if you look at the Levin report, if you look at that, that actually, according to the Levin report, instigated this whole set of harsh enhanced interrogation techniques that amount to torture. And then, when he resigns from the CIA, our fine President Bush at the time gives him the Medal of Freedom, or what, Medal of Honor, whatever it's called, the highest medal you can get. And so that's what happened. We gave that to really, I would say, almost the torturer-in-chief in terms of the CIA. Levin report is very strong about him.
Okay, so here's my question. Michael, we've had a little bit of a raging debate about the timing of all of this. I think that these people have to be held accountable for their actions, whether they're crimes. You know, obviously you're a lawyer, so they have to be, you know, proved, but through a process. But, you know, my concern has been a little bit about timing, that Obama has this window of capital right now, and that we have, I really believe my issue is global warming. That, you know, a lot of this, if we do it immediately, so yeah, is there a statute of limitations on any of this stuff?
Well,
I
mean, you're raising two important points. One important point is that he has a lot on his plate. Global warming, the economy, a couple of wars he's running.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's serious stuff.
Healthcare, right.
Yeah, healthcare. I mean, I don't think, on the other hand, I think one mistake Obama made here was taking this on himself. He's a political figure. He's the head of the entire country. Initially, he should have said, look, there may have been wrongdoing here. I'm going to turn this over to Eric Holder, and Eric Holder will look at this through a legal lens and make decisions. And that is exactly what he finally did most of yesterday and what should have been done. And that takes it a little bit out of the political agenda. But what takes it more out, of course, is if Eric Holder gave us an independent prosecutor, which is what...
Okay, so that's my next question. Right, let's say that we, you know, go full bore. Let's just say I'm wrong and everyone wants to move first and just say we can do both, which I'll still dispute. What is your preferred route? Because on Keith Olbermann last night, there was a federal former prosecutor on who said, don't put a special prosecutor on, because what happens then is that everything gets buried, everyone clams up, there's no more kind of talking on, you know, about it, and it can easily get buried and lost. If you have a special prosecutor, you should have public hearings and congressional hearings or a commission. What view, Michael Ratner, do you have about...
I think she's wrong. I know her piece. I think she's dead wrong. I think if we look at our experience with special prosecutors, the most recent one was Fitzgerald going after Libby for revealing the name of a CIA agent. That went extremely well. You start congressional hearings here, and there's two things that are going to happen, congressional or truth commissions. One is you're going to start giving people immunity that eventually will make them unprosecutable. And that's what happened in the Iran-Contra affair with Ali North. The Court of Appeals reversed his decision. The second thing you'll do is you and I will be having this discussion, as I said in the beginning, 2 and 3 years from now, and there will not be any prosecutions. It will be a way of evading it. You need a special prosecutor for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One is because the Justice Department, even as it is very compromised from the career people who were in there under Bush. Secondly, Holder and Obama, unfortunately, have made statements about not looking backward and wanting to move forward. And while I think those are disingenuous, because I think nothing looks forward like prosecutions, because that deters torture in the future, that they've actually, in my view, biased and prejudiced a neutral position on this. And therefore, I think you really do need a special prosecutor. It's not like it would take up a huge thing. A special prosecutor does their work. They do it generally not publicly, and they come out with the result. So, you know, I disagree on the issue that that somehow it's going to disrupt very much, but particularly disagree that we need any kind of special commission set up. The only way a special commission, in my view, that could work here is if it's done hand in hand with prosecution.
Right. What about Obama's 2 points that you have to find someone beyond reproach, and it has to be seen as nonpartisan, which I think is the more difficult task. I think both of them are tough. Look at, you know, Clinton, whatever, Janice Reno picked Ken Starr. And look, you know, what we want a Republican. So should we go for that one Republican who was Philip Zakow or something who cited the need? Because you never know. I mean, who is impartial?
We're talking about for a prosecutor or for the commission?
No, for a prosecutor.
Well, for a prosecutor, I don't know very well whether Fitzgerald would be the right one, but here you had a Republican prosecuting a Republican out of Chicago. He's the guy who did, you know. And so that's a conceivable, there's probably ways to do it. We certainly had that under the Nixon administration when we had, you know, a couple of very, very strong Republicans who were in there doing the prosecutions and looking into what Nixon had done. So they can be found. And the problem here is, really, when we get down to it, is no country, and particularly the Western countries, and particularly the United States, likes to put into the dock their former leaders, particularly for war crimes or torture. Right.
So that's my second point. So they had a parade on MSNBC this morning of Republican senators saying it's going to be a banana republic, that nobody goes after former administrations. And you know, whether those arguments are completely ridiculous because of the rule of law or not, in our modern-day media circus, Michael, as you well know, you're going to get the media. Andrea Mitchell said, the question was, well, are you saying, because they're raising the question of as to whether this is really torture and whether torture works, and they're changing the entire conversation. So they're going on the offense, not defense, and you're going to get a whole slew of them out there, and they're
right.
going to get equal time. And Obama is concerned that that is going to be like another impeachment, another one of these big, you know, election 2000 base partisan struggles, and the public is going to go, what the hell? I'm losing my job.
Right, but you can already see what's really going on. I think you're right. There's two things going on. One is, does torture work? And this is this whole argument that no one tortures their former people. And what's really going on is this is why I'm amazed by it. That it actually looks like there's a possibility that people could be tried for torture. And so the right wing and the people who might be part of those defendant class are getting frightened by it. And they're fighting back in every way you can. So that's,
I think that Cheney, that's why I said the other day, as soon as I saw him go on Fox News, I said the reason he did that is because I think he wants to taint the jury pool and turn it into a partisan thing before it even gets there so that that happens. What do you think?
I mean, that's what's going on here. There's a fight now going on because this is much more serious than I expected. But if we're talking about worrying about what's on the front page and Obama and what he has to do, the situation he's in now, in some ways, is the worst of the situations. Because now it's basically free fire everywhere. No decisions have been made. Yeah, he got rid of, he said, of the lower level CIA line agents. Then he gives it to Holder for the next crowd. Then documents keep spilling out. There's still, you know, my office has a half a dozen lawsuits, as do others, civilly suing these guys for torture, Rumsfeld and others. Those things are still going on. He has to take positions on those. Guantanamo is in closed death. There's all kinds of stuff with that. He has this problem over the next couple of years no matter what. And my view is, unless some decisions are made, it's not exactly twisting in the wind as I talked about Nixon, but you got some problems there. So I don't think that he's in a better situation now than he would be if he actually made a decision to prosecute him.
Could President Bush have pardoned himself for
any future? This.
Really?
Oh, sure we did, because we figured he was going to give pardons. We were wrong, and we probably underestimated the fact that a pardon would have almost been like an admission of guilt. So that he didn't give him for that reason. But we also, it had never come up, the issue. You were asking, can you pardon yourself? But we think there's a good chance he could have.
So is it conceivable, Michael Ratner, is it conceivable that we're going to, 6 months from now, be looking at the trial of George Bush and Dick Cheney?
Is it conceivable? Yes. Is it likely? Probably not at this point. Is it likely 2 years from now? Probably more likely. Whether it'll be Bush and Cheney or whether it'll be what I call lower level, Rumsfeld and
Tenet, right.
And some of the lawyers. I think there's a fair chance. Is it 100%?
Well, two years. No. I'm okay with 2 years from now. That's perfect for me. That's good timing. Because
right, you got to start. You asked me about the statute of limitations. I forgot.
Yeah. When
you know, the torture statute runs out in 10 years. That's a 10-year statute. So you figure some of this torture, the worst of it, Abu Zubaydah, et cetera, that's 2002, 2003. So you're talking about 2012. You're talking about, you know, a couple of years from now. So you got to start these investigations quickly. Now, of course, the woman you referred to said, oh, we shouldn't start so fast, who was on TV last night. She said, well, it's the last act of the conspiracy. It can go on and on. But that's not necessarily so. You got a small window on torture. It got to 2012, really, for the worst of the worst of the problem.
Can I get McCamp and Shreve through in June 1st, Michael, then start the investigations?
Okay.
Okay, deal.
Right.
Michael, keep us. I would love to have you keep us updated. Obviously, this ain't going nowhere, and you're on top of it. So please come back and
okay,
join us.
Great to be with you.
Always. Michael
bye
Ratner.
Bye.
Okay. He is the president for the Center on Constitutional Rights. He also wrote the book, The Trial of Donald Rumsfeld, that may be a real-life kind of scenario. All right. Got a lot of people on the lines already wanting to just jump in on this one. Imagine that. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. Your call's next.
Falling asleep at the wheel again, baby. You're drifting over the line, yeah. Your hands are tied, but you're losing grip quickly. Fix, make a new redesign.
Okay, so let's see. Eric Holder's at a hearing on spending, and they ask him about his intentions on prosecutions. Didn't one host, Nancy Skinner, say that this issue would consume politicians in the media? Yeah, it is. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Let's go to the phones and get Mike in here. Hi, Mike.
Nancy, am I on?
You are, Mike.
Hey, cool.
Thanks for
I just wanted to say really appreciate what your efforts for Detroit and American car manufacturers. Never had anything but an American car. I'm 57 years old. Would not buy anything but an American car as long as I can, because we can't let Detroit go. People,
well, you got 30 days. Actually, you've got a week, Mike.
I'm sending letters today. I'm going to do everything I possibly can, but you know, the only thing I take solace in, and I don't even know if it's solace, but if this country were smarter, the best-selling magazines at checkout stands and grocery stores wouldn't be the Star and the Inquirer and People. But, you know, people need to wake up. All these banks can go away tomorrow, but we need jobs to fix this economy. We need 24 million jobs. We need people to work. We need to make something.
You're absolutely right. You have to make something. And so you're responding to, I was so upset last night. I was. I'm reading all the reports and a week deadline, everything. The banks are, and the banks at Chase and Citigroup, the governor of our state was just on, and she said it plainly and clearly. The banks are the ones trying to force the autos into bankruptcy. And so we're feeling down. I see the fear and anxiety in everyone where I live. And when I heard Rachel Maddow, who I love her show. I think she's smart, intelligent. But she took her time after torture to take a jab at the Lions' new logo.
Well, and you know what? With all due respect to Rachel, and you know, I generally agree with her too. She's totally missing the boat. This is an entire state in the United States of America, that once it's gone, there is no getting it back. And I was, during the break, your commercials were on American debt relief, feeding America, vaccines for children, heart disease, credit reports, energy savings programs, and diversity. And we're in bad shape. You know, people aren't suffering real bad yet. But they will be.
They are here, Mike. That's what I was trying to say to folks.
Well, and we're
so we've
going
had over
to the 12%.
Place. 12%, yeah, and I want people to know this is like your clarion call, folks. That's why I keep saying it's like it's a slow motion Katrina. We're over 12% unemployment right now, and GM's shutting down their factories. They just announced yesterday for 9 weeks that all those people are going to go on unemployment in a state that's already completely overburdened. And the governor was on. I mean, we can't handle it. The suppliers are going to go bankrupt. When those go, it started, folks. It started yesterday. And what are we talking about? Something that happened 8 years ago while Michigan collapses. I am sorry if I got emotional. Stay tuned.
Nancy, that's 1-888-646-2629.
Imagine being me for just a moment, if you will, in Detroit. I mean, with this, it's not just it's the auto industry, because I saw a lot of reports. This is across the country. A woman, one of the reports was about, you know, after all of the bashing, she's in Tennessee saying she's tired of it. We're 7 days out, and no one's paid any attention to it. So if I got a little upset that the only national media attention we got was to make fun of the logo of our perfectly losing football team. Forgive me. We're imploding in 7 days. I'm sorry. I should not have mentioned that. What's the point of me having a microphone if I can't point out the real life destruction that will happen? And I think it sort of underlines my whole point about the prosecutions moving everything off the headlines. Okay? Because that's what this stuff tends to do. It's a lot sexier to have this and the build-up, and I saw it all. I knew it was coming, and I saw it all day. And the join us tonight. Will Eric Holder, will he pursue prosecution? So we have a little bit of Eric Holder. He was supposed to testify at a hearing on Justice Department spending issues, just an ordinary course of business hearing. And, of course, again, when this is in the news, this is what's going to happen. So here's, he's fine, I'm not sure which member of Congress this is, because we were involved in our show. But here it is, the question about his intentions and his answer.
Obama has stated that he will defer to you, as the chairman said, in determining whether or not to prosecute federal officials. I think this represents, most Americans believe it represents, a dramatic shift from the president and his chief of staff's earlier statements that I worry will have a chilling effect on current and future administration officials and our federal workforce. I personally agree with the statement of Senators McCain and Lieberman and Graham that, quote, and they said, pursuing such prosecutions would have serious and negative effects on the candor with which officials in any administration provide their best advice and would take our country in a backward-looking direction at a time when our detainee-related challenges demand that we look forward. Insofar as that, the questions were several, and one, will you pursue the prosecutions, and can you tell us what the criteria will be, and if you have anything, you can tell us now, and we can wait for what you tell the chairman. Secondly, is it true that there were additional memos or documents that have not been released that show that the interrogations resulted in invaluable intelligence, perhaps saving lives. I think there are other ones, and the first one were released. The second one should be released. And with regard to that, can you just comment?
First, I will reiterate what I said, I guess, last week, and it's consistent with what the president has said as well. Those intelligence community officials who acted reasonably and in good faith and in reliance on Department of Justice opinions are not going to be prosecuted. It would not be fair, in my view, to bring such prosecutions. But I also want to be clear that I will not permit the criminalization of policy differences. However, it is my responsibility as the Attorney General to enforce the law. It is my duty to enforce the law. If I see evidence of wrongdoing, I will pursue it to the full extent of the law, and I will do that in an appropriate way. As I think I have shown throughout my career, I'm prepared to make tough decisions that are, in fact, fair decisions. But I want to end at least this response with where I started. With regard to those members of the intelligence community who acted in good faith and on reliance, Justice Department opinions that were shared with them, it is not our intention to prosecute those individuals.
Okay, so basically he didn't give us too much. We didn't get too much out of that. They're not going to prosecute low-level operatives who were forced, were told to do this stuff. So the jury's not out on what he's going to do yet. Hey, they got a big decision to make. Apparently now it's Eric Holder's. All right, I'm going to jump into your calls real quick. But here is just, this is an email. I got so many emails, and I thank you for that. Nancy at nancyskinnerlive.com. But here's one I think that was really representative, and I'm going to use this to kind of set my case here. This is from Steven Seagal, and I don't think it's the original Steven Seagal. He says, "Hi, Nancy. I enjoy your show and wanted to contribute to the discussion today about whether or not it is in our best interest to investigate and prosecute officials who violated international law, committing war crimes on our Constitution. If I get your point right, you are saying that by going after people on the issue of torture, we are putting into greater jeopardy our chances of passing major legislation addressing global warming." All right. Hey, Krieg, we need to get a thing. I never said either or. It's always been about timing. I've been misquoted in the blogosphere saying no, as I've been called a Peggy Noonan now. I never said that. But let's work with this a little bit. So he goes, assuming that calculation is true, then you seem to be proposing that we make a choice to hold off on the torture issue, at least for now, thank you, because global warming is a more important issue. Did I get that right? Yeah, you did. Here are my thoughts, because this is our window to pass it. And if we don't, we're screwed, all of humanity. Al Gore's going up. He's going to be speaking tomorrow. If we are truly a nation of laws and are striving to take the moral high ground, we must do what we know is right. All right? Note that, right? The argument about it not being a politically smart move, which is debatable, I believe, is not a new argument. I got the same response more than a year ago from my representative when I urged him to support impeachment of Bush. He claimed that Congress had too many important things on the plate already. I disagree with this line of reasoning. I know you like analogies, so here's one. I happen to work in a public high school. Let's say I get some pretty definitive evidence that a school employee is molesting students. But there's a bond measure coming up that would enable us to implement some huge improvements to the school if it were to pass. Do I keep the information quiet so as not to engender the bond measure? What if the teacher agrees to take an early retirement? What do you think? Thanks for your thought-provoking discussion. I hope to hear back from you. Well, Stephen, you are. All right, let's start with your analogy. You are talking about knowing that an active teacher is molesting students, and so there is a preventable future crime by you taking action, correct? You blowing the whistle and preventing a child from being molested. Absolutely imperative. Completely irrelevant to what my point was. Because a bond measure is about self-enrichment, okay? What I am saying is if you had to choose, Okay, and I'm not saying you do. I'm saying flip the reverse order of how we deal with these so that you don't have to choose. We just had Michael Ratner on the program, leading expert, who said there's a 10-year statute of limitations on this. So if you have to choose between prosecuting Bush officials and global warming, and you're talking about we have to do what's morally right, isn't it the case, sir, Stephen, that what's morally right is always, and there is a philosophical, I know this from my philosophy classes in college or from religious studies, there is a principle that is the first order of moral business is to prevent harm that you can prevent. You know, there is a point about going, we are a nation of laws, but, you know, they're not all equal. I remember debating about impeachment. And when we have the ability to take action to prevent the destruction of the planet now, and the effect of that, the moral imperative of that, I think is stronger. And we do not have to sacrifice the fact that we're a nation of laws because we still have a statute of limitations. We can still go back and prosecute. So one, your analogy is completely backward, and in that, I'm preventing the harm to this planet, just like I would ask you to prevent the harm to that student. And it's not for just self-enrichment. We can still go back and get a second bite at the apple. If I'm right, okay, with this, folks, if I'm right, then we get both. If you're right, if you think we have to do this now, then we have a 50-50 chance because we don't know what the outcome will be. So why would you take a 50-50 chance when you can have a 100% chance? That's my question. Why go for 50-50? Why even move into that terrain while we got we control both houses? We could push this stuff through, then begin the investigations or start them now completely off the script. Why would you want to? Why wouldn't you want it all? I don't understand why that makes sense. All right, but you're going to tell me because the lines are full. So I'm going to shut up, put it out there, 1-888-64-NANCY. When we come back, we'll get right to your calls. Short Live. New York Times is reporting that the U.S. is said to be preparing filing for Chrysler bankruptcy. Treasury Department's preparing Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing for Chrysler that could come as soon as next week. People with direct knowledge of the action said Thursday. Treasury has an agreement in principle with the UAW, whose members' pensions and retiree health care benefits would be protected as a condition of the filing. And they try to work out some deal, but they say that the only major question remains Chrysler's lenders. If no agreement is reached by those lenders, because they have secured assets and they don't want to, they want to liquidate it, then all bets are off. So here you go, folks. We're a week out from, and apparently this is it. This is the edge of Katrina. This is the storm hitting the shore. And if you do not, I was on the air in this very studio before. It was a Monday morning. I was doing the morning show. Because I had worked in the whole issue of floods and hurricanes and loss and FEMA, we knew that the mother of all hurricanes was a Category 5 hurricane on New Orleans, since New Orleans is underground. And when I heard that that was coming all weekend, I got on my air 6 a.m. going, oh, my God. Like, I can't. This is the unbelievable scenario at all the conferences that everyone talks about. And it's really happening. And I was all over the fact that the administration seemed not to be caring. Bush was out golfing somewhere, or Arizona or wherever. And I was freaking out. This is happening. And watched that whole thing, warned about it. And I am telling you again, as sure as I sit at this mic with this, this is the minute it goes into bankruptcy, all hell will break loose. This is going to unravel. Today I'm hearing the suppliers are saying, even with the shutdown for 9 weeks that's already being announced, they can't make it. This bankruptcy goes in. And if you think this just affects Detroit, and if you think this just affects Michigan, you are so wrong. Today, what were our numbers? We had worse than expected unemployment, 640,000 people, higher than they ever thought. That's 6.1 more million people on collecting unemployment. What did we have? Housing starts. Oh, my God, they're worse than we thought. They're down 3%. We thought they'd be up. No, they're worse than we thought. People are hurting. This industry is about to have a cascading effect, should it go under, on all of you. And you wonder, and I'm taking this much heat because I don't want to spend all my waking hours trying to look backward now when we have the ability to deal with the problem before us and then still get to this. I mean, we have lives here, people. This is, you have no idea what this is going to do. We're trying to get out of this depression. It is, and it's a depression. It's going to be a depression. I'm looking at the economic pictures from across the globe. Ireland is in a straitjacket right now. They have no good solutions. Did you read Paul Krugman's column on that? Aaron Gobra? It broke? He's talking about we could end up like them. And with all of this happening, what are we talking about? What is the cable networks all focused on? Could there be an investigation? Is that a short... Honestly, even though I despise everything that happened and agree that it happened and agree that there's a rule of law, aren't there priorities, people? Don't you take care of the immediate crisis in your midst if you have the ability? And stop calling me whatever you want to say, that I don't care about the rule of law. That's crap. We have a 10-year period to do this. And if we do it in the fall, what difference does it make? But right now, it is consuming the media oxygen. There wasn't a single story on this a week out from the bankruptcy of Chrysler. And it's going to happen, and it's my job. I have a microphone. I'm from Detroit. It is my job to say, this is Katrina. This is a economic slow-motion Katrina. There is no question about it. And where is the national media on this? Where are the progressives who should think about the reinvention of this industry, the ability to create those green jobs that we've talked about? All right, I can't even take a call now, can I? All right, I promise when I get back. This is very upsetting to me. I mean, it should be upsetting to everybody. Folks, we're a week out from this. With the phone banks filled up, it's torture. That's it, torture. You know, we're going through torture here. These are human lives now. People suffering now. The calls are next in the Nancy Skinner Show. Oh, Miss Sale. Oh, Miss Sale, you to run. All the way. All the way. Nobody say, nobody else. Well, I would like to hold my little son. Here we go. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY. Just a quick update on the fight over the interrogation panel. Senate Democratic leaders joining forces with the Obama White House said they would resist efforts by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other prominent Democrats to create a special commission. I guess they had a caucus meeting last night. And President Obama told congressional leaders he did not want a special inquiry, which he said would potentially steal time and energy from his ambitious policy priorities and could mushroom into a wider distraction by looking back at other aspects of the Bush years. Harry Reid is with him. And other top Dems are saying they preferred to wait for the results of an investigation by the Senate Intelligence Committee expected sometime late this year. But Ms. Pelosi renewed her call for an independent panel. All right. What's our number? 1-888-64-NANCY is the number to the program. Let's go to Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
I really like your show, first of all.
Thank you.
Second of all, I live in California. You were talking about our governor, I believe, yesterday.
Yes.
And I live in the suburbs. I'm a suburban mom. And a couple, just last year even, it was the thing. You see all SUVs in our neighborhood, all SUVs. How come our governor, if he believed it was so important to have fuel-efficient vehicles, didn't encourage us before now to try and buy, some other more fuel-efficient vehicles? It wasn't until this past summer when the gas went up so high, we were paying over $4, $4.25 a gallon mm-hmm. in California. People wanted to dump their SUVs. I could not drive my SUV for the whole summer. However, I got into a car accident not too long ago. My Dodge Durango had not one scratch. The other lady's foreign small car, she could not drive it away. It was completely totaled. So I will always buy American cars. I hope I can always buy American cars.
Well, doesn't look so good for you, Jennifer.
Yeah.
No.
Unfortunately.
No. Yeah, because no one seems to care. But thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. This all might be just a moot point. This whole thing, because they're already filing the papers. I see this sucker unraveling in a really ugly way, and that's just, hey, I've been out there right a lot about stuff way ahead of time, and I see this train wreck happening. Jerry's in Los Angeles. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Nancy. Just wanted to let you know I appreciate your voice in the wilderness, as it were, regarding the auto industry and its potential for getting us off our dependence on foreign oil and moving us towards a more clean, more green-based technology, if you will, and energy. Anyway, my question for you is, why has there been such silence in the discussions of the auto industry and the so-called bailouts? Why has there been such silence on this potential that the auto industry seems to have?
Do you mean the potential destructive cascading effect that it will have in just over a week?
Well.
That? That's why, if I make this point, I can't make it more clearly. There's only so much media oxygen, and I know lots of folks have been saying you can do both at the same time. But let's face it, this is a different era. We have something called a collective public consciousness. And so there's usually a story, and that's why, politicians, they time things for certain release at certain times, because they know that one story, and I know how producers work, they go looking for the stories, what's hot, because those TV stations want ratings. And so it's, to talk about these issues of the economy and the auto, it just is not as sexy as going out there and talking about stuff like this, the partisan stuff, the prosecution of Bush officials, even, before this, anything that seems more partisan it's just more attractive from a rating standpoint than, the autos.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it really is, because, there are really... This is going. It's going. Then it's going to be kind of one of those things. We're going to have to say, "I told you so," because it's going to. If it happens, and Jerry, you need to call. You need to call your representatives right now, and tell them that you support the continued pressure and support for the auto industry as they go through this. It's really the banks and creditors. It's the banks that got bailed out that are now doing this to the auto industry. They are the ones that are the last holdout in all this.
Oh, great.
So, you know, it's Chase and Citigroup.
Work, huh?
Yep, that is exactly it. And so it's you want to talk about a travesty? It's disgusting that we are not paying attention, allowing our taxpayer dollars that bailed out the banks. The same banks are doing two things. They are holding the auto industry. They're essentially they want to liquidate the auto industry. And today's report, the president met with the bank, the same banks, because they're jacking up rates on credit cards. So they're jacking up your rates with your taxpayer dollars, and they're liquidating the manufacturing base of the industry. And where's all of our attention? On Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got to move along, Jerry, but thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. And call your members of Congress.
You got it. Thanks.
Okay,
Kathy.
You bet. It's 1-888-646-2629. Let's go out to Raul in Los Angeles. Hi, Raul.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for taking my call. Just want to weigh in on these memos that were leaked by the president. You know, I'm really disgusted with what he did here. You know, he just shows he's reckless and irresponsible. He lacks leadership. First he says there's not going to be any prosecutions. Then he leaks these memos, which I think he should be investigated himself for what he did.
What do you mean leaked memos? Are you talking about
the CIA memos, ma'am? The one you were just talking about.
Well, he didn't leak them. He declassified them.
Well, he put them out there, in other words, right?
Now that's different than a leak. A leak?
Nancy, you going to let me talk?
Well, yeah.
Let me just explain where I'm coming from. Today,
get your facts straight, though, Raul. That's fine.
I'm sorry?
You got to get your facts. There's a difference between leaking. He's a president. He can declassify a report.
Okay, he put them out there in the general domain so people can read them. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Okay. Now he says he's going to turn it over to the Attorney General. Now what is that all about? And he rides over to the CIA and he gives them a pep talk. You know, man, that's lunacy. That someone could do something like that, to backstab the CIA, then to go in and give them a pep talk. Now he's going to turn it over to the Attorney General. You know, this man is not qualified to be president, ma'am. Okay.
Wait. If you're gonna debate me on this point, then let's do this fairly. So he's not the chief law enforcement officer, right? You know that is the attorney general.
Exactly. That's why your guest said he should have done this the other way around. He should have just turned it over to him initially before he leaked anything out, before he declassified anything. If he saw anything that was suspect, he should have said, you know, I'm going to turn this over to the attorney general. That's all he had to do, ma'am. He didn't have to declassify.
Which, what are you more mad about? That he always had to turn it. It wasn't a matter of ever.
He declassified those memos. That he shouldn't do that.
That's his right as the president of the United States.
It's reckless, ma'am. He doesn't have the right.
Why?
To do it.
Why? Yes, he does have the right. Yeah. He's the president of the United States. Raul, get your constitutional civic facts straight. The president does have the right to declassify.
Okay, which I told you is reckless what he did. Okay, now
why? Why?
Wasn't the Democratic
Why is it reckless?
Congress
why is it reckless?
This, ma'am?
Why is it reckless?
Weren't they briefed on these water torture or whatever you call
it? You said it was reckless for him to have made them public. Why?
Why? Are you kidding me? Then you're gonna
No, answer the question, Raul. Why?
Man, why? I'll tell you why. First of all, he said he's not going to do any prosecutions, right? Then he said, then he leaks the memos out, or he declassifies them. Then he turns around and then he goes. Then he turns it over to the Attorney General's office.
Wait, but why did you say it's reckless to make if the torture happened under our government and this is we are the people, the consent of the government? Why is it reckless to release that information so that the people could know what happened?
Ma'am, do you think he really gives a rat's ass what happened to those detainees? All he cares is getting this president. Okay, if he really cares about morality and honesty,
yes.
He wouldn't have a tax chief running the treasury. Okay.
All right, I hate to give you a little coaching advice here on a debate. You're really ruining your credibility when you just start going all over the place, and now you're going after Geithner. If you're going to go into debate, now this is my forensic school training. You got to stick to your point here. You think that he was reckless in doing it. So do you think by letting these people know who were tortured? You think that somehow, like, first of all, you don't think they knew waterboarding was going on? This wasn't, like, public knowledge? He hung up. Okay, see, folks, this is my argument here, that you're going to have, when we engage this debate, whenever we decide to do it, you're going to get the other side coming up with arguments like torture works and that he was reckless. And this is a debate that they're going to want to say, we had a strong national defense. We didn't get attacked. And you're going to have to deal with this. I'm just telling you. That's why it's not the idea that everybody's just going to submit, tell the truth, that we're going to have our moment of, oh, you were right, and it's all going to just go down as we planned. No, not so much. Let's go to Michael in California. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Just on the auto companies, you know, the reason there's been such silence is, you know, we've held hearings, we've funded the companies, we've seen the result. Washington, the companies, and many Americans continue to insist upon failed policies. The realistic solutions are ignored. That's why people feel it's pointless to comment, and that's why the banks see a bad credit risk, no buyers, and they have to protect the tax dollars they've gotten, and they're not going to throw them down a rat hole like they've done in the past. So I think that that's a sidebar on the auto. But on the on the torture situation, I don't think that any of this really has any. I think the whole protecting America by torture is a canard. It's a straw man. It's not about torture. It's about overturning 500 years of Western civilization, precedents of Western law by political forces that insist upon dominance over the sovereignty of individuals, their rights, their lives, their justice, their beliefs. You know, we have the right to remain silent in a civil court, an obligation to remain silent, you know, name, rank, and serial number in time of war. They want to bypass those laws that protect civilization as a whole, exclude themselves from all laws governing their actions, to solicit a story or narrative of the world in secret through torture that cannot be questioned, challenged, or examined, and then is backed up in public with jingoism and red baiting. It's called the Christian Dominionist Theory. The Pentagon calls it full spectrum dominance. These people are fifth columnists, sedationists, quislings. I mean, they could not stand any kind of scrutiny in any kind of hearings or questioning on any of their pretexts.
Okay, so I'm still stuck on throwing money down a rat hole, Michael. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Did you get that? I got stuck on just throwing money down a rat hole. And we'd rather have existential debates about the nature of torture for the foundation of societies. Okay, great. You don't think it has anything to do with you? You just wait. All right, we got one more segment here. Bank credit cards. Yeah, all right. I don't know. Not a good day, folks. Someone's got to cheer me up. Oh, I got just the thing. I've got just a thing to cheer me up. Coming up on the other side, I'll share it with you. Check this video out on YouTube. This is a little thing that was sent to me as a little cheer up since I was reading torture memos and impending bankruptcy reports for the auto companies late last night. I said I was bummed out. So this is at a train station in Denmark, I believe, if you Google it, Belgium. And they just start playing this song by Julie Andrews where one person starts dancing and then she starts singing the song, and then everyone starts dancing, and it's 4 minutes that will make you feel better, because the whole train station ends up dancing to this song, and then they crank it up, and it worked for 4 minutes. I suggest you check it out on YouTube because it will make you feel better, and we all need to feel a little bit better right now, especially me. So it's 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. That's 646-2629. People are losing another 60 minutes, losing their 401ks. They did a piece on the 401k recession about how a whole group of retirees are now officially screwed. People are worried about their financial future. They're not going to be worried about torture. They elected President Obama to fix these problems, and they're worried about their self-interest, friends. I think we're reading this wrong. I do. I know it's unpopular, but I think that people are worried about the immediate impact on their lives and their children and those things. And it's, I think they want justice, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I think most people, that's why you got Republicans to vote for a black president. Okay, let's move on and go to Rochester, New York. Nancy is on the line. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I was just calling to let you know that I think you're terrific. I love your program, and I look forward to leaving work so I can listen to you from 5:15 to 6 every evening.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And I think you're right on. I mean, I don't understand why, to me, if the media is the air, if they don't just start talking about what's important, I don't know. It seems like there's something we could do about that. You know, these news programs, that they should just concentrate more on this economic catastrophe as opposed to reporting so much about this other stuff.
Yeah. And it's not that it's not important, Nancy, but do you have kids?
Yes.
If you have a whole list of things on your to-do list, if there's an immediate threat to you and your children, isn't that going to be the first thing that you're going to deal with rather
Exactly.
And that's kind of my analogy here.
Yeah. You're exactly right. And, you know, I listen to Ed Schultz at noontime when I have my lunch, and I'll tell you, he was saying the same thing you're saying.
Yeah, Ed's been good about really covering the auto industry.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, I would say outside of Ed Schultz's show, I can't, you know, there's not been a whole lot of really good coverage of this impending catastrophe.
No, and I was thinking when that Raul called in, at first I thought he was going to say if maybe that hadn't been released, maybe, you know, the people wouldn't be out there so much now. You know, the people wouldn't be talking about it so much. You know,
the
thing with the torture. I mean, I voted for Obama, and I think he's terrific, and I don't think he's done anything wrong.
Raul was on the other side of it,
and that's
what I'm telling you, is that this is an issue that the other side's going to want to play ball with, because it's easy for them. They can get out there and they can act like the tough guy. Torture works, and we kept our nation, strong and attacked because of this, and they can have a whole number of ruse arguments, and it'll go back and forth, and the people who are losing their 401ks on 60 Minutes, and an industry that's going under that's going to affect everybody, I don't care what you say, the rat hole, call us the rat hole now. You wait. The rat hole is coming to a neighborhood to you, close to you. That's what people care about right now, okay? It's the economy, stupid. It really is. And then it's not just about money. It's about preventing the worst from happening. And we will have time. We will have time to come back and do what's right. But we all got to just take a deep breath here and be grown-ups. And I know that's not as much fun as being Catwoman. But that's what we need to do. So we'll pick it up and take it up. It's Friday. Thank God we have lots of fun stuff planned for tomorrow. Thank the Lord. It's Friday tomorrow. Thanks a lot. See you tomorrow.